Hello, everybody. Good morning. It's such a pleasure to be back. It was about a month ago, and it's the last time I was here. So it's so lovely to see you all again and to see some people I haven't seen for a while. I'm really glad that you're here. Thank you for coming. Oh, so the way our time together will work is we'll begin with an arriving meditation and then have a little bit of time to talk with each other before our longer sit. I'll offer some shorter Dharma thoughts. We'll have a longer sit, a break, some announcements, come back for a Dharma talk, and always with plenty of time to talk with each other, which is just so lovely, you know, just to open it up and hear your thoughts and talk about the topics or whatever's happening in your practice. So welcome, everybody. Take the time now just to look on your screen and see who's here. Who's here in the Sangha today, who you know, who you might not know. It's really a pleasure to just look and have that sense of greeting one another just with our gaze. And you never know who's looking at you, right? So you don't need to be shy about it. We're all just seeing each other and really happy that we can do this. And I'm curious, where are you all coming from? And if you wouldn't mind, I'm just going to open up my chat. If you feel like it, send a chat about where you are today, geographically, so we get a sense of our Sangha. Jonathan's in Calgary, Alberta, San Rafael, San Francisco. Audrey, hi, you're in France. Thank you for coming. Portland, Ashley, Larkspur, Nevada City. Cleveland, Bill, welcome. I think this is really fun. I really love knowing where everybody is. And I keep my gallery view open instead of speaker view. Susan, good to see you again. Glad you're here. I like the gallery view because I feel like I'm in the room with everybody instead of just having one big picture. And Rich is here from West Marin. Welcome, Rich. Nice to see you again. Okay, so you can keep that going if you want, but it does give you a sense of everybody who's here. And again, I am here from Arcata, about 300 miles north of Marin, on the unceded land of the Wiat, and I'm delighted to be here. So we'll begin with our arriving meditation, and the invitation is just to find a posture that works for you, a posture that is comfortable, that can support your attentiveness, whether you're seated or standing or reclining, whatever works for you is just fine. And the eyes can be closed or open, also again, whichever is most comfortable for you. If your eyes are closed, just notice the touch of the eyelids. If the eyes are open, soft, gentle gaze downward, and begin to arrive. And as you begin to arrive, you may notice, just whatever the state of mind is right now, influenced by whatever you've been doing before class began. Maybe it's been a busy period before this time, maybe not. But I like to come into awareness of how my mind and my heart are right now before I move into a practice of settling them. Just to greet myself as I am. Then taking a few very conscious breaths, letting the inhale be an arriving, the exhale a settling. Sensing the movement of the air going in and out of the body. The movement of the body itself in response to the breathing. And then noticing the body, the places the body is touching whatever you're connected to, supported by the earth. And settling in. And sit quietly for a few minutes, dropping the shoulders, breathing, arriving. If there's any holding in the body, if you're noticing any constriction anywhere, see if you can soften any amount, loosening the jaw, dropping the shoulders. And on your next exhale, softening the muscles of the belly and the chest. And at the same time, sensing the strength and energy of the back body. It has a quality of attentiveness, uprightness, arriving into this receptive, curious posture. Just to offer you a reflection question, to just drop in and see what comes back. Is there an experience that you've had in your life that changed you in a way that there was life before this experience and life after the experience? And as you bring this to mind, notice if there's a response in the body. Maybe there is, maybe there isn't. What has changed you? Here is a poem from Judy Sorum Brown called Trough. There's a trough in waves, a low spot where horizon disappears, and only sky and water are our company. And there we lose our way unless we rest, knowing the wave will bring us to its crest again. There we may drown if we let fear hold us within its grip and shake us side to side and leave us flailing, torn, disoriented. But if we rest there in the trough, are silent, being with the low part of the wave, keeping our energy and noticing the shape of things, the flow, then time alone will bring us to another place where we can see horizon, see land again, regain our sense of where we are and where we need to swim. Welcome, everybody. So the question that I asked, what has changed you? You know, most of us have that experience that something in our lives has occurred that we get that sense of life before and life after. And it's not always a difficult thing. It can be very joyous. It can be really a momentous that's full of joy or full of sorrow. And it's a way of remembering, I think, our growth, remembering the ways in which wisdom grows through big events and how we experience the full range of experience of our lives, how we're with that, an intimacy with our lives. And I want to talk about that today as we go forward. How do we become intimate with all things? And we push them away or we pull them towards us. It's just natural. I've been recently thinking a lot about Thich Nhat Hanh's definition of mindfulness, which we talked about last time I was here about a month ago. And what he says is, mindfulness allows us to look deeply and see what's going on. Mindfulness means seeing and knowing what's going on. I think on the surface of that, that sounds pretty straightforward. It means seeing and knowing what's going on. But how do we do that? How does that seeing and knowing actually affect us? What are the doorways into that deeper knowing that creates a lot of wisdom? So one of the ways that I know that many of you are familiar with are these three primary universal facts of life that affects everybody, or also known as the three marks of experience. But I think that we can take it out of the Buddhist language and say three universal facts of life, which include impermanence, dukkha, this quality of what's often translated as suffering, and karma, or interconnection, the true fact that everything is connected to everything else. Nothing exists in isolation. Ultimately, it doesn't work like that. And so the experience of impermanence is certainly enormous. I know we've talked about it a lot in this sangha. And how do we actually stay in relationship with everything that is changing? All the loss, all the grief, all the sorrow, but also all of the joy, all of the happiness that truly is there, or even just the regular everydayness of everydayness. And when we come into the relationship with change, that's another way of understanding mindfulness. And the same thing with dukkha, which we'll talk a lot about later on today, around what is our relationship to difficulty. And also this very important piece of interconnection, not self, that everything happens because everything else happens. So let's just take a couple of minutes now, if you want to, if you would like. And on that question that I answered, what has changed you? Do you notice it in your body? Is there a reverberation when you actually drop that question in? Does anybody want to share what has changed you and what's that been like? What have you noticed in context to practice? And you can use the raised hand function. You can make yourself known. So I asked us to do this sharing because this is how we really, I think, connect with each other and understand that everybody experiences difficulty, and it's all in all kinds of different ways. And we all know this. We certainly know it conceptually. We know it, that it is true. But, you know, when we can just share a couple of stories, you may have had the thought, oh, yeah, I get that. Oh, yeah, I get that. Or, wow, that hasn't been my experience. I've been lucky, or my experience has been this. And we start to see how much the same we are, and that we actually don't need to know the details of each other's stories, but we can certainly know that we've all been touched by both sorrow and joy. And there are big things in everybody's life that have been the before, the event that creates the before, the after, the big shifts, the changes, not to mention all the small things. So mindfulness allows us to look deeply and see what's going on, to know what's going on, and to use our practice to support us in that way. So let's move into our meditation now. We will sit for about 25 to 30 minutes. So finding a posture that suits you. And once again, dropping down into the body, eyes closed or eyes open, whether you're seated or standing or reclining, maybe you're going to choose to do walking meditation. Whatever posture you choose, see if you can sense the dignity in it, the integrity of bringing your whole self to this time. Being willing to be with yourself just as you are, breathing, relaxing. Maybe pain arises, maybe stiffness arises, or there's a distracted mind. Whatever is happening, coming back to this moment, this breath. You might hang out with sound or sensation, whatever works best for you. Here's a piece from Roshi Pat Ankyo O'Hara in her book called Most Intimate. When we're willing to be intimate with what actually is here now, to look directly at all of our experience, we might recognize that this is our life, however different from our thoughts and ideas about it. It's as if we hunker down and actually get very real, recognizing that our thoughts of gaining and losing, good and bad, happy and sad, can be what distance us from ourselves. When we breathe in fully and pause, we clear a space in our mind without judgment. If we're willing to hang in there with the practice over and over again, noticing how our thoughts of gaining and losing distance us from ourselves, and from what is, we open ourselves to a whole new reality. We enter into intimacy with everything. We enter a world of joy that is so close, so pervasive, that we're surprised we haven't been aware of its presence all along. That's what's possible. Maybe use Sylvia's beautiful instructions. May I meet this moment fully. May I meet it as a friend. To meet the moment fully is to be intimate with all things, that courage to show up, to let belong whatever arises, and to meet it as a friend with kindness and gentleness, quality of friendliness. And let's sit quietly. When the mind wanders and you notice it, just come back and begin again. It's not a problem. If you notice tightness in the body, see if you can bring some breath and some easeful energy to that space. Let it soften. Just begin again, over and over again. You might notice a certain amount of stillness and relaxation that is coming about. Take note, don't miss it. If the mind is off thinking, come back, sense the body, sense the breath, and sense into any ease and peace. You might even say to yourself on the in-breath, breathing in ease. On the out-breath, breathing out peace. Ease in, peace out. Sometimes that can help bring us closer to any amount of ease and peace that's already here and that is also arising in the meditation. As we continue to sit quietly, noticing the more subtle energies of quiet, of this ease, perhaps the breath has slowed a little bit, maybe it's a little shallower, the whole mind, heart, body quiets. And maybe that's not true for you. Maybe there's restlessness. And if there is, just noticing that, being with the restless body, the restless heart or mind, and offering some kindness. This is how it is right now. Sometimes just in the naming, in the acknowledging, we can allow any discomfort to just be as it is. And as we name it and acknowledge it, sometimes it loses some of its strength, and an ease can arise in its place. Simply notice. And now drawing the awareness into the heart center, this area of the center of the chest, the upper back, even the upper side ribs. Just checking in with your own heart this morning. How is it right now? Maybe it's many things. Whatever is here, and can we let it belong? If you like, imagine breathing in and out of this heart center, nourishing and enlivening it, stabilizing the heart, softening, making it a little more spacious, however that you experience it. And we'll move into our practice of metta, beginning quietly in our own metta practice, wishing ourselves well, quite simply. May I feel safe. May I feel well. May I be at ease. Notice how that lands in the body, in the heart and mind. May I feel safe. May I feel well. May I be at ease. So we hold each other's sorrows and joys together in our Sangha, knowing that the goodness of our efforts to cultivate awareness and kindness, this kind of empathy and compassion, it really matters. It opens our hearts. It gives us more capacity . And so we hold it all. We hold it all, knowing that life is precious. Nobody is free of sorrow, and hopefully we all have some joy. May all beings feel safe and protected, find some peace and happiness, know strength and health, and live with some ease, so the suffering truly can be eased. So let's take a 5-minute break. And as you go into this break, hold this quality of how you feel right now in your heart. Maybe don't go check your email. Just take a pause and come back in 5 minutes, please. Thank you. Ready? So what I want to talk about today, which is the necessity of dukkha, the necessity of suffering. And you might be thinking, oh, please, that is not necessary. I have enough. We don't need to really talk about it. It's necessary. The Buddha famously taught, I teach one thing, suffering and the end of suffering. And I think that that's the big overarching teaching. That there is suffering, there is an end of suffering. So when I talk about dukkha, the word itself, the Pali word that is often translated as suffering, it's helpful to know my understanding about the word itself. It comes from a literal translation of an ill-fitting spoke in a hub, that it's the friction that occurs when this spoke that doesn't quite fit and the wheel turns, there's the friction when it doesn't fit right. Another way that has been helpful to me to understand dukkha, this comes from John Peacock, who is a British Pali scholar, former monk. He said, if you take your forearm and you rub it on a brick wall, not too hard, but you just rub it on a brick wall, it's a little scratchy. It might not hurt too much. You know, you can imagine just that brick wall. But if you keep doing it, and you keep doing it, it starts to hurt. It starts to get abraded. It doesn't feel so good. That's dukkha. How do we know when we've had enough? When enough is enough? We don't need to think more is going to feel better. So dukkha is, in secular circles, thought of as stress, challenge, difficulty. It's also that sense we get when things change and we didn't want them to change, that fundamental, it's often translated as unsatisfactoriness of anything, and that our lives are, or that life includes dukkha because of impermanence, because things are going to change. I don't actually agree with that. I think about it differently, in that just because things change doesn't really cause me dukkha necessarily. I've had so many experiences in my life that I'm so grateful for that have been glorious. And I know that it's not always going to continue. You know, one of the things that I do regularly every year is I lead river trip retreats in canyons on glorious rivers. That can't go on forever, and it's one of my favorite things of the year. It's an amazing experience. And even though the trip has ended, I don't feel sad about it. It's still inside of me. So I think that the nature of impermanence when it comes to things we really enjoy, even though they end, it doesn't have to cause stress. It doesn't have to be an experience of dukkha. So that might be just a little different way of looking at it. And, you know, when I was originally taught this around life is fundamentally unsatisfactory because it changes because of the impermanence, I've thought about that a lot, and I don't necessarily experience it in that way. So, you know, how do you experience it? Just thinking about it for yourself. And there are certain things I wish wouldn't change. But I think that that's where we make that transition from the second noble truth to the third noble truth, is that we tend to make things worse, but we actually don't have to. There's a choice. We can really let the goodness of our lives, the things that nurture us, be inside of us anyway. So there's another way that I relate to the word dukkha, and the translation is a quality of not quite rightness. Do you ever have that feeling? It's just something is not quite right. And it might be why you came to practice to begin with. So if you just reflect back, what has brought you to this practice? It might be many things, but it might be a deep sense of not quite rightness, of I just want to feel a little bit better. I want to have a deeper understanding about life. I want a mechanism for being with my life with a little more ease. And I think that that's common for all of us. So when the Buddha taught in his first teaching after his awakening, the Four Noble Truths, that says life includes suffering, there's a cause of this suffering, which is our insistence that things be a certain way. There's an end of suffering. Suffering can cease, which is when the mind subsides and we're not in an argument with how things are. Sylvia says peace is possible. It is. Maybe not everlasting peace because everything changes, but in that moment, the mind can subside. And then the fourth noble truth of there's a path leading to the end of suffering, which is all of our practices, this whole path. So life does include difficulty. We tend to make it worse. We don't have to. That's a big deal. We don't have to. And then here's how, all of these practices. So as I've been talking about dukkha, not just here, I just finished teaching a retreat and we had a long discussion about it. I think that it's helpful in my thinking, may see what you think, is to stop defining dukkha and just call it dukkha. Because I think we know what it is. We know how it arrives in us. And so the languaging around it, I think, can be tricky. Dukkha is dukkha. I want to read to you a little bit from Norman Fisher's new book, When You Greet Me, I Bow. This is a fantastic book. It's a collection of his writings over many years. And this is what he says about dukkha, and I found it extremely helpful. The more we look around us, the more we pay attention to what we're feeling and what others around us are feeling, the more suffering we see. There's more suffering than we know. Anxiety is suffering. Not getting what you want is suffering. Irritation is suffering. Anger is suffering. Having to put up with things you don't like is suffering. Knowing that you're going to have to die and you really don't want to, that's suffering. Sickness is suffering. Old age is. Not having enough money is suffering. Losing your job is suffering. Having a bad marriage, having no marriage can be suffering if you want to have a marriage. Fear is suffering. Knowing you could lose what you think you have is suffering. Being ashamed is suffering. Feeling loved but not loved enough. feeling lonely, feeling bewildered, feeling too cold, too hot, being stuck in traffic, getting in the wrong line, and the guy in front is very, very slow, and the other line that you could have gotten into is going much faster, and you could have been in the front of that line by now, but if you joined it now, you'd be at the end. All is suffering. Even without talking about earthquakes, the wars, the deprivation, the oppression, the illness, and the hunger that is happening all over the world, suffering is just completely common. It's not a special condition. It's a daily experience. So the idea that suffering is some sort of mistake and a minor problem that we could overcome with a little bit of meditation and a positive attitude is the towering pinnacle of human self-deception. I think that right there is how we can relate to the end of suffering. That we're kidding ourselves to think that this is going to end, that we can figure it all out. And right there in that knowing that it's actually not possible to come to a permanent end of difficulty, there's relief right there. There's end of difficulty in understanding that. And what he goes on to say is dukkha refers to a psychological experience, sometimes conscious, sometimes not conscious, of the profound fact that everything is impermanent, ungraspable, and not really knowable. What if we let ourselves off the hook of having to figure everything out? Not really knowable, ungraspable, impermanent. And he goes on to say, dukkha is not a mistake. It's not a correctable situation. Now, does that fly in the face of what the Buddha taught, suffering and the end of suffering, dukkha and the end of dukkha, where he says it's not a correctable situation? It's human consciousness itself. Now, when I read that, I thought that was a piece of insight and inspiration that was really helpful. Dukkha is not a mistake. It's not a correctable situation. It is human consciousness. Dukkha is every moment, every experience of our lives, not just the things that obviously seem to be dukkha, like pain and suffering, loss. Pain, suffering, and loss are built into every moment of consciousness. The great and beautiful secret of meditation practice is this. You can experience dukkha with equanimity. That's what I really want to talk about, is that we can experience a depth of sorrow and still be okay. How is it that we can experience the losses that we do and get out of bed the next day and we keep going? Or as I am guessing that every one of us here has experienced some sort of loss that broke our hearts. And we survive and we begin to endure. And some of us even thrive. We're actually okay. And that is what I think Norman is also saying. I love this. The great and beautiful secret of meditation practice is that you can experience dukkha with equanimity. It's true. And that is astonishing, that we have this capacity to hold, this heart of ours can navigate both. And you can trust that. It might be hard. It might take a long time. And we're all different with that, depending on our resiliency and our capacity and what is happening. But I think we can do it. That dukkha is a fact of everyday life. It's human consciousness itself. That opened up a way of thinking about it for me that has shifted my perspective, that it's not something we have to get rid of. It just is. Okay, it just is. How we relate to it is the key, right? I remember one teacher once said to me, Heidi, struggle is extra. It's already hard enough. It's already hard enough. Struggle is extra. And Shinzen Yang, a Dharma teacher in Los Angeles, he says, do not fight with yourself at any level. What if we didn't, right? Do not fight with yourself at any level. And of course, you know, we go along in our lives and things seem to be okay. And then there are the ruptures. Something happens. And I think we can say that the great and beautiful secret of meditation is that we can experience dukkha with equanimity. And there are also repairs for the ruptures. So we can look at rupture and repair as a cycle, as something that is inherent in the movement of dukkha, in how we hold the dukkha. So ruptures happen when greed and ill will and confusion are alive and active, right? These three toxins or poisons that we all get tripped up by varying levels of the graspiness, the greediness. We get tripped up by holding grudges and the ill will all along a continuum line from, you know, incredibly angry to kind of angry to just kind of holding a grudge and not seeing clearly. And these ruptures often, they can be from deceit, from betrayal, from loss, from rejection. They can be from all kinds of things. I thought it was like this, and then I found out it was like that. Or it could be a small rupture between you and somebody else in a conversation where one of you is misunderstood by the other. And it's not a huge deal, but you just understand misunderstanding and we can repair. So how do we repair the natural ruptures? I think much of that comes from our mindfulness. It can, from the perspective of our practice, it comes from that awareness of seeing and knowing how things are, taking responsibility, of course, for who we are, and not to beat ourselves up about it when we get off track, when we've caused a rupture, when something is just this natural occurrence between two people, to be able to say, you're right, I'm so sorry, and not have to be afraid to recognize our humanity. We all make mistakes. This is the dukkha. This is just true. We can use practices in the Brahmaviharas, self-compassion, metta, to cultivate the equanimity, to soothe our own hearts when things are difficult. This very deep surrender around how things are. It's not the life, our life, as we said earlier, our lives aren't exactly matching our idea of life. Our lives are exactly what they are. So there's a surrender, there's an acceptance. It's like this. And to know peace truly is possible. And this is how we navigate these ruptures and repairs all the time, and that it's possible. Here's another poem. This is called The Unbroken from Roshani Rhea. There's a brokenness out of which comes the unbroken, a shatteredness out of which blooms the unshatterable. There's a sorrow beyond all grief which leads to joys and a fragility out of whose depths emerges strength. There's a hollow space too vast for words through which we pass with each loss, out of whose darkness we are sanctioned into being. There is a cry deeper than all sound, whose serrated edges cut the heart as we break open to the place inside which is unbreakable and whole while we learn to sing. Life includes dukkha. It's life itself, every moment. And there's more to the story. There is a wholeness that is inside of us. And I think our practice takes us in there, especially when we show up in Sangha and we can be held in a greater space. This comes from Ross Gay. He's a writer and poet from his book called The Book of Delights. Among the most beautiful things I've ever heard anyone say came from my student, Bethany, talking about her pedagogical aspirations or ethos, how she wanted to be as a teacher and what she wanted her classrooms to be. She said, What if we joined our wildernesses together? Sit with that for a minute, that the body, the life might carry a wilderness, an unexplored territory, and that yours and mine might somewhere, somehow meet, might even join. And what if the wilderness, perhaps the densest wild in there, thickets, bogs, swamps, uncrossable ravines and rivers, is actually our sorrow? It astonishes me sometimes how every person I get to know, everyone, regardless of everything, by which I mean everything, lives with some profound personal sorrow. Brother addicted, mother murdered, dad dies in surgery, rejected by their family, cancer came back, evicted, fetus not okay. Everyone, regardless, always of everything, not to mention the existential sorrow we all might be afflicted which is that we and what we love will eventually go away, be annihilated, be dead. Is this sorrow of which our impending being no more, maybe it's the foundation, the great wilderness? Is sorrow the true wild? And if it is, and if we join them, your wild to mine, what's that? For joining too is a kind of annihilation. What if we joined our sorrows, I'm saying? I'm saying, what if that is joy? And that is our question here. How, when we share sorrow, it becomes joy because it's held. It's dispersed. It's common. We share it. Now, obviously, I'm not talking about Hallmark joy. I'm talking about relief and release. Shared sorrow is like dissolving salt in a big, huge ocean. It's not as bitter. We need to do this. We need to do this. You know, the Buddha said, happiness is contentment with whatever there is. That could be hard to agree with, but this is what he's pointing to, is this incredible equanimity about whatever is showing up in our lives, to be able to navigate it with some skill that we can say, okay, I can do this. Some days it's easier than others. You know, Secretary Colin Powell recently died. And this is what he said a couple of months before he died. I've got multiple myeloma cancer and I've got Parkinson's disease, but otherwise I'm fine. Now, can you imagine that? I've got multiple myeloma cancer and I've got Parkinson's disease, but otherwise I'm fine. Don't feel sorry for me. For God's sakes, I'm 84 years old. I haven't lost a day of life fighting these two diseases. I'm in good shape. Now that's how I want to be, because that is the deep acceptance of dukkha, to say, and I'm fine. I'm 84, of course I've got something. So don't fight with yourself at any level. And there's a deeper question in here that I come back to regularly. We're so analytical. You know, we want to know why all the time. What is causing my distress? And we often learn a lot from that. That's certainly a worthy question. But sometimes, and if we go back to what Norman said about life is fundamentally unknowable, ungraspable, what if we didn't have to know why all the time? And that the question becomes, where is this suffering leading? Where is this suffering leading? And then I think we get some agency. Like, the truth of dukkha is here. Where is it taking me? So we don't perseverate on the past, but we actually use the presence of the dukkha as some fuel and the truth of it. Leonard Cohen said, I greet you from the other side of sorrow and despair with a love so vast and shattered, it will reach you everywhere. This is the transformation, right? I greet you from the other side of sorrow and despair with a love so vast and shattered, it will reach you everywhere. So let's pause for a moment and then we'll talk with each other. Okay, we have some time. We have a little bit of time to talk. What do you think? What are some of your thoughts, reflections, questions, additions? Just make yourself.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.